Can I just, whilst we're waiting for the last people to come in from the foyer, we're not at all surprised that that some people are drifting in and out a little bit. You know, there was a lot of excitement about coming to hear the minister this morning. That means we've now got a bit of a sparser feel to the room. And I don't know if you know it as what I know it as, but I call it the church pew syndrome, that you wind up with the people at the back and not people at the front. And I don't know if you all followed the invocation to move around a bit, but if you'd like to feel free to make the speakers feel more welcome to, you know, move to some of the tables at the front that are vacant, we would be more than welcome more than happy to welcome you up the front here. I'm reliably informed that none of the speakers spit, so you'll be quite safe. Now, I should also point out that, point out the fact this conference is being webcast, and so we'll give a big wave to all the people listening on the webcast, and when we have the NGN, we'll be able to see them waving back to us. But we can't right now. We'll just feel the love coming from around New Zealand. If there's anyone in the room who knows somebody who wants to get hold of the webcast and doesn't know how to, I'm reliably informed that there is a link straight off the Commerce Commission homepage. So go to www.com.gov.nz and you should get there. That then brings us to our next session. And I should get my piece of paper to remind me what the next session is. We have got four speakers for you. And I need my glasses to remind me of that. To talk in this session about convergence. Now, this session is just four speakers with some Q&A at the end. There isn't a panel. But don't worry, I am going to give you a task at the end of it to try to get some feedback. So you will be able to respond apart from just the Q&A. We have four highly experienced speakers here. Going from the left, Tim Cowan from BT Global Services. Tim has been General Counsel and Commercial Director for BT Global Services since 2004 and has led the negotiations of some of BT's largest corporate transactions, commercial deals, in particular the outsourcing of ICT deals for which BT Global Services has become renowned. Following him, we have Alan Noble, who's the Engineering Director for Australia and New Zealand of a small company that you may have heard of that has had some impact in the internet called Google, which I think when I Googled something yesterday has got an Auckland Cup on its logo. It's one of the other interesting fun things about Google is seeing what they do to their logo each day. Following on from him, we have Don Clark, who is the Chief Executive of REANS, the Research and Education Advanced Network of New Zealand, and possibly will talk to us about health networks, but I don't think he will. And finally, Stefan Korn, who is the Managing Director of Web Fund Limited, and he describes himself as one of New Zealand's evangelists. Now, I'll be careful about that phrase, given that I've just finished reading a book about the exclusive brethren, so I might just pass on that one for a second. That's all the introduction I'll give them. You've got longer biographies in your program, and without further ado, I'll ask them each in turn to address you. Thank you.
Can you hear me? Yeah, good. Anybody who can't hear me, put their hand up. Sorry, forgive me. It's very late at night for me. I arrived off the plane this morning at 7:15, so if I pause anywhere during the course of this presentation, that may be because I've lost my place. It may also be because I'm going to sleep, and you're entitled to nudge me if that's the case. So, in terms of what I am going to try and set out to cover, first of all, I want to spend a little bit about why I'm here and what my background is. I spent about 10 years working in the UK, but at night, because you guys are awake during our night time and we're awake during your daytime. Sorry, the other way around. Or maybe. That's my first nudge, right? That was because we invested in a company called Clear Communications, which built a fiber optic network up and down this country, which many of you will know. And we ended up in a large amount of litigation, which I thought was precedent setting at the time, but obviously people have forgotten about it, about interconnection and access. And the issue at the time was this issue about access to communications infrastructure, the last mile issue. That was probably about 10 years ago now. So much changes, but then also so much stays the same. I particularly bring out the point that Clear was a fiber optic network, and we'll try and pick up some of this as we go through. So from that time to today, what is it that BT has done? Well, I think we learned a couple of things along the way. We first of all learned that the model that was prevalent in the late 90s, the one of we will build it, they will come, doesn't make money. So we decided not to do that. And instead, and I think this is important, actually being customer-led became the basis of the entire company's strategy. Now that's perhaps not what you're expecting me to talk about, but I think it's probably the most fundamental thing. Because regulation, if anything, if it does its job well, actually changes behavior and changes the culture within organizations. And the starting point problem that I see around the world when dealing with incumbent monopoly telcos is that they tend to have a culture of responding to subscribers. They typically haven't in the past described them even as customers, and they respond to requests. So the sales departments are really order takers. They tend not to understand forward-looking customer demands. They tend not even to ask customers about their forward-looking customer demands. It's quite a unique issue across many industries. IT customers are very different. IT companies are very different because they spend their time working with and sitting with their customers, understanding the customer's issues and the customer's utilization of technology and how it can more effectively add value to the customer's business. It's a very, very different philosophy. So I think, you know, one of the things that we discovered somewhere along the way was that you really, really need to focus on the customer morning, noon, and night. So in terms of what I intend to cover in the next 15 minutes or so, BT's 21st century network, otherwise known as the core MPLS platform within the organization, superfast broadband, which is really partly deployed already in the UK, the philosophy which I've just touched on, some points about industry consultation, which really is a consequence of the regulatory regime. Essentially, the organization still has, we still have the issue of engineers wanting to build things that not many people really want to buy, and that the customer-led organization is a desperately difficult thing to embed across a very large organization. And I think that regulation understood that and actually really helps to ensure that all customer requirements, whether it be for wholesale products and services, whether it be for SDKs, ABIs, the things that the software developers need, whether it's for consumer or business, small, medium, large, whatever, that all is helped through the regulatory consultation process. Finally, I wanted to just make a couple of points about risk, because next generation networks are often regarded as being a huge risk, and what does that mean? And then I'm happy to take questions if we've got time at the end. So just some sort of factoids for you. This is the story so far. 21CN is a UK core infrastructure. The core is complete. That means that we've built an MPLS core. What does that actually mean? It means we've saved a lot of money because we've taken out a large number, and as time goes on within a telecoms organization, networks tend to be overbuilt and fixes put in, and systems, that's the IT systems, get applied and layered on. We've done a lot of outsourcing contracts, and layer after layer of outsourcing means that you're taking on networks that weren't originally built from a single plain sheet of paper. They were built and then layered onto an existing network as time goes on. One of the things that IP and the MPLS backbone has enabled us to do is to reduce those costs. I think it's running at something like 600 million gross cost reduction at the moment. If you look at the end users at the wholesale level, something which I haven't got a map of this, but wholesale broadband connect and Ethernet is available. That's not last mile, but it is backhaul. It takes you to the customer. Critically important for downstream operators, something that we're pushing around the world to see we can ensure that, you know, incumbent operators provide those sort of services. They're very important as an interconnect product. When you're looking at the IT front end and you're looking at a big customer's activity, if you take a company like Unilever that we do a lot of work with, they will typically have local area networks that are running on protocols and systems which are using computer systems which use Ethernet and Ethernet for distribution of traffic. And if you can move across that boundary into the telco, into the wide area network, I should say, the ability to use software and communications capacity within the broader platform provides opportunity for economy of scale advantage, for the development of things like cloud computing, but also some really basic cost reduction opportunities for customers. We can come back to that. You've got next generation broadband access, but I think a point which isn't on the slide is that I think there's about 170 major customers that are fibred, and they represent a very significant proportion of economic activity. So typically what you will find in most countries, the UK is no different, is that a relatively small proportion of businesses account for a huge proportion of economic activity and GDP. And often those are the ones that have see a value in being connected through fibre to the network, because they see the benefit and they pay for it at the moment. So what's the shorthand for the approach that we've adopted? Well, we call it a mixed economy. It's a combination of using copper most effectively where that makes sense, fibre and copper mixture, fibre directly, and I think some people have talked about mobile. Whether that provides sufficient or adequate capacity, which is really the broadband, the connectivity piece of the equation, depends on what value chain the customer is in. And this is a thought really which the slide really talks about engineering, but the issue really depends on the demand side and the segmentation of the demand side. And if you're looking at a customer in, you know, the media space or someone who's in the creative industry, relatively small operations, small office, home, you know, small and home and small business customers will often have huge bandwidth requirements. So they may decide to go for a fiber connection because it adds value to the business that they're in. That may not be true of somebody who's in a retail business. It depends on the customer by segment and the aggregation of segments into, you know, identifiable demand groups. There is also a tendency for customers with similar requirements to club together. I'm not necessarily saying that that's in the geographical space, but also there's a collaborative component to that as well. I mean, one of the obvious things is if you look at financial services organizations and you think about investment banks being different from high street banks, the investment bank may actually have a similar communications requirement to a larger transaction-based law firm or accountancy firm. So you can find that there are communities of user in similar places that have similar sort of communications requirements. And I think when you just look at and think of a country, people tend to think of consumer and business, but there's a much, much greater diversity within that, obviously. A mixed economy because there's a mixed set of demands. But I think the underlying philosophy that we've adopted is that there is a platform which needs to be a IP-based platform which needs to be open. And I think, if you like, that's probably the big strategic shift in thinking that took place 5 or 6 years ago in BT, where we opened up applications programming interfaces and we allowed systems design kits so that the programmers out there can actually build programs and applications. There was a very famous session at one of the World Economic Forum in Davos when my former boss, Andy Green, stood on a platform with Bill Gates and Carly Fiorina. At the time, Carly Fiorina was the, I think she was the chief executive of Hewlett Packard. And they obviously spoke first because we're far more important than Andy. And he said, well, they're wrong. This went around the world in about 30 seconds flat on CNBC Live. And he said that, you know, they're both wrong because their business models depend on monopolizing the customer. And our business model, partly because of our regulated history, actually recognizes that the customer doesn't want to be monopolized. And so we give them a platform which enables them to take the applications, the services that they want, and they can do the programming, they can use the platform in a way that they would want to use it. I think that's a big philosophical shift. This slide is a stock piece of BT corporate slide pack telling you what I've just told you. I think it's wonderful in its use of language. Simplicity, open, real-time, flexibility, in it. But it sounds almost meaningless when you look at it in terms of sort of abstract thought. And I was trying to give it a bit more reality. So what are we talking about? Well, we're talking about 1,200 points of presence around the world. So it's not just a UK network. We have points of presence in 170 countries. We were, until recently, installing an extra point of presence in an extra city every week. We've pulled that back recently because of the cost of doing so. It's a highly secure network. When it says security on the slide, there are 1,400 people dedicated to security within the organization worldwide. And there are 500 security consultants. We actually bought an organization in the US which does cryptography and is mentioned for those people who've read the Da Vinci Code in the Da Vinci Code. So apparently we know something about cryptography that not many other people do. I've mentioned the openness. Openness is the SDKs, APIs, which is critical to development. I think that there are, to give you some statistic, 7,500 downloadable applications in 4 different program languages. So this isn't a mild sort of degree of open. This is a very open and sort of core part of the strategic thinking that other people can probably do better at software development and applications than we can. But our customers will benefit from the rich variety of openness that we put on this platform. I think that is quite radical thinking from a former telco, if you can think of us that way. So what does that provide? Well, I mean, the world that we're moving into, I think is probably best described by somebody other than me. There's a professor in Stanford called Larry Lessing, and I was reading his book on the way over, which is called Remix, and he's talking about the place where value is added in the sort of cyberspace at the moment. And he describes innovation, intimacy, you know, what customers really value in terms of the, if you're thinking about an analogy, if you think about content, many people say, well, content is king, and he makes a different point. Content is a very important ingredient, but it's only a component that the customer needs. Many customers value speed as the most critical component to their business. I'll give you one example. We do a lot of work with financial services organizations, and at the moment there's a huge volatility in trading stocks and shares. This often doesn't involve human intervention. It's tracked through algorithmic computers. And the network that we supply actually provides milliseconds of difference depending on how it's engineered. Now clearly if you can provide a bank with milliseconds of difference, that adds literally hundreds of millions to the bottom line of the bank in its ability to respond to the variations in the trading conditions. So speed in its own right can be the content, rather than content which is traditionally thought of as being movies, songs, and that sort of media. And the way in which Larry puts it in the book is that it's a bit like the ginger in gingerbread cake. It's a very important component, but it's not necessarily the most costly or valuable one. Without it, of course, the cake doesn't taste very good. So it's a very important component, but there are other things that are important. I think if you think about the bandwidth component, that is one component. If you think about the storage component, that makes a difference to bandwidth and processing capacity, because the engineers in the room will know much better than I will that those three factors interrelate with each other and make a difference to customer-defined applications and, if you like, speed of processing, but it isn't. It's the interrelationship between the three of them that enable customers to do what they will with the network. So, to summarize what I've just been saying, what you've got is a platform for open innovation. Software tools and capabilities in the hands of customers and partners, giving customers the ability to rapidly customize. Again, coming from the philosophy that we don't know our customers' business as well as they do, but we want to give them the tools with which they can apply the IT and the systems that we can supply. We do actually have a lot of consultants that can help the customers. We have 17,000 consultants around the world, which is about 7,000 more than Accenture when I last did the count. I'm not sure whether Accenture have increased or we've reduced since then, so I'm not sure I could absolutely make that claim. There's a point there about Google Maps and the ability to link applications. People talk about things like mashups that I don't fully understand, but as I understand it, if you can take a component like a map and you can then identify between Google Maps and say where you've got real estate that's particularly attractive, you can then map that out and have it visually presented by mashing up the two different technologies. That can all take place on the web and it can be done very, very quickly. And that can be done on the web, actually using conduits, pipes, support applications, the underlying systems that we provide. So making that easy for customers to do adds real value where it didn't exist before. And I think that's where the next generation are going with their network. And there's a lot of trials underway. Now, what I've just been talking about is the 21st century platform. That's the sort of core network platform, which starts off with networks and has systems and it has processing and basically IP switches, huge quantities of IP switches within it. The next generation network is really about how we build out, and the conversation all about this morning is really only one part of the value chain. And I think of what I've said as really not sufficiently talking about the entire value chain. And again, it's a difficult thing to bring out, but if you think about different customer groups, and you've got financial services, you've got government, you've got commercial and brand sectors, you've got different segments within that, they all have different value chains. We do a lot of work with pharmaceuticals companies for whom the communications infrastructure is critical to their ability to get their drugs to market fast. We do a lot of work with the health service in the UK, for example, as well. And the way in which the infrastructure works will determine the structure of the health, the organization of the health service. You know, if the country decides that they want to have very fast response times for things like stroke care, there's a thing called the golden hour, then having a larger number of local hospitals is the way that you would go. Having remote diagnostics, which enables you to do consultations at a distance, determines the sort of different IT that you need. Now clearly there's a huge interrelationship between both the quality of care and the service that's available and the IT systems and processes that you've got in place. So what I was really trying to bring out there is that if you just look at the two different parts of supply chain, you think about the next generation networks, that's an access component. You think about the platform, that's an underlying capability or technology. But there are different IT components through the entire space. It used to be the case that take-up, which Kit mentioned this morning, was massively determined by a very simple thing. Do you have a computer in your house? Well, for consumers, that's a kind of starting point question. What it is, how it's running, what capacity it needs, is becoming a big issue. I think the smaller applications at the customer level that you're seeing in the consumer space mean that you can have smaller applications with greater processing capability within the network or the interconnected series of networks which makes up the cloud. And that is not that's not something that has changed in the last 40 years. Whether you've got, and they used to talk about dumb terminals and big mainframe computers. Well, you've got distributed processing throughout the cloud. What's the extent of the processing, either in the core or at the edge, is I think something that both ebbs and flows, with pinch points throughout. So my final point was I said I'd make a couple of points about approach to risk. If I can summarize this by not coming down on either side of the argument, but simply noting that there are arguments both ways, you find incumbents will typically argue, both in Europe and the US, I'm not sure about here, I haven't looked at it very closely, that investing in the next generation of fiber is a hugely costly thing and therefore carries a lot of risk. New entrants will argue that actually the fact that you're making huge investment doesn't necessarily carry a lot of risk if you've already got the customers attached to the network. Essentially, it's like an upgrade. There are many arguments about regulatory holidays, particularly in Europe. We've seen tremendous lobbying taking place in front of the European Parliament at the moment by a variety of incumbents that are pushing for freedom and time to get a payback on their next generation investment. We take the view that that's the wrong approach. It seems to prevail in both Germany, France and Spain, though. Co-investment is possibly a way around any perceived risk issues. I'm not even sure there are any real risk issues, but I'd like to finish with the point that I've been trying to make throughout. If the focus is actually placed on the customer and organizations don't think of themselves as monopolies that are there to make as much money as possible out of the customer, but if they think of themselves as providing value to customers and they ask customers what they want and they ask them to forecast what they want, then you can take longer term contracts and you can take a lower risk profile over a longer period of time that will fund the necessary investment that's taking place. And I think more time and thought needs to go into those sort of commercial risk sharing arrangements than perhaps has taken place to date. So I don't know whether I've got any time left, but...
I think what we'll do is have questions for the whole panel at the end.
Thank you very much. Cheers.